And now it gives me great pleasure, it does, to introduce our speaker for this evening. Let's welcome Nate D. from Orchid.
Nate Alcoholic.
Nate!
Good to be here. I wanted to first thank you, Lynn, you know, for asking me to speak tonight. It's an honor and a privilege to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's funny because I was here a couple months ago, and Daniel, my other brother in the rooms, was speaking. And I got too close to him and Lynn after the meeting, and that's how I'm up here tonight. And it's weird because he's not here tonight. You know, it's weird. But it's something that I really appreciate about the fellowship and this brotherhood that we have is we keep each other busy. You know what I mean? Because I need that. You know, because I'm selfish and self-centered. You know, and I need to get out of myself, get out of my comfort zone, you know, and it allows me to grow, you know, so I appreciate that about the brotherhood, you know. I also wanted to welcome the newcomer. This way of life is amazing, and I hope that my message tonight is a message of hope, and if you don't stay, that's fine, because that's how I was for 5 to 6 years. I was in and out, in and out. But I hope it plants a seed, you know, that if you ever get to that point where you can't picture your life with or without drugs and alcohol, we're here, you know, and we do it together, you know. Also, my sobriety date is July 26, 2016. And it's a miracle for an alcoholic drug addict like myself, you know. Before I came in this time, the longest amount of sobriety I had was 85 days, and I was in and out for 6 years. And it's not me, you know, it's because of the Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship, the program, and a God working in my life today, that when I came in, I didn't believe in God. I just started doing what you guys did, you know. I have a home group. It's the Thursday Men's Stag in Orchid, at the Orchid Presbyterian Church, and that's at 6:30. And I love that meeting, you know, because we stay in the solution, we embrace life in recovery, we have fun, and we don't let each other take ourselves so seriously, you know. And, you know, I feel like every week I gotta pop this guy's head because he comes in there like that big, you know. And that's what we do, you know. And I need it too, you know. We keep each other the right size, right? Right? And then I also have, I would consider my other home group, and that's on Wednesday nights here in this room. It's the Mad Men Big Book Study. And that's at 7 o'clock. And we get into the book, you know, we get into this book, which is our design for living. This book has never lied to me. And I continue to learn and grow, you know, and we work the steps. And then we go into the traditions, you know. And there's a good mix of old timers and guys that are young in sobriety like myself. You know, I've learned so much from that meeting, you know, and it's all solution based. I want to thank my sponsor for being here, Bob F., you know, and his sponsor, Victor. Those are two guys that have shown me what this way of life's about. I try to meet with Bob at least once a week, you know, and I try to do what he does. And Bob goes to more meetings than me. He's heavily involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though he has a busy life outside. He tries to keep what our primary purpose is, and that's to help the alcoholic who still suffers. You know, and he's shown me so much what this way of life is about, you know. And what I try to do is I try to pass it on to the other guys that I'm walking through the steps, you know. And It's, you know, I try to do what he does, and I think in the last year, I've had more milkshakes than I've had in my whole life. You know, I've also got that from him. You know, we're all, you know, after meetings, we go to Doc's or Jack in the Box, you know, and, you know, when I came in, I thought my life was over when I came into these rooms, and I found out that it's just the beginning. You know, we have fun, you know. I also want to thank my beautiful girlfriend, Kate, for being here tonight, you know. That God that I didn't believe in when I first came in was really looking out when he put her in my life. You know, she has stuck with me through those roller coasters of early sobriety, you know, where I've acted a fool and caused a muck, you know, but she means so much to me, you know. And we got woken up this morning to news that she's an aunt now. Her younger brother and wife had a baby boy this morning, and he's beautiful, you know. And that's just a gift of sobriety in this way of life that I get to experience today. You know, we got to go to the hospital, hold our new baby nephew, you know, and just be in the moment, you know, and appreciate, you know. And I also want to congratulate the birthdays. Kevin, taking his two-year chip, that is, you know, right here in the big book, page 89, it talks about to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch the loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot of our lives. You know, and that's a bright spot of my recovery. You know, seeing men and women come in here as hopeless as I was, you know, start getting busy, you know, and seeing the results come, you know. And it's not just those material things, you know, it's that happiness, you know. You've brought so much to my recovery, you know, I mean that. You know, and I want to congratulate Michelle. It's awesome. And then one more.
Joanne.
29. Happy birthday. I started drinking. I had my first drunk when I was 13 years old. And I don't remember the situation too much, but I remember how it made me feel, right? That loneliness, those fears, you know, those insecurities, you know, I felt okay, you know. And it wasn't my first time. My second time that I got drunk, I stole booze out of the neighbor's garage with some buddies, and we got busted, you know. And that's how my drinking career started, you know, by getting busted. And and then after that, I kind of took it easy, because it was that fear, you know, that point, that fear sobered me for a bit. You know, I went through high school, I got heavily involved in sports, and that was my purpose, right? That was my outlet. When I took a step on that field, I felt a part of, you know. But when I took a step off, right, it's when all those insecurities, my alcoholism was in full force, you know. I was lonely, even though I had a loving family, you know. I had a loving family, host of friends, but something wasn't right. You know, something was not right. And my senior year of football, I got injured. And I hurt my back, and I was introduced to pain pills. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's part of my story. When I think about alcohol, drugs, anything, it's all the same thing for me. It's all the same thing. Me saying that I'm an addict and not an alcoholic, which I did for years, is like saying that I'm a golden retriever, not a dog. Right? It's all the same thing for me, but I had to find that out, right? So I'm not here to look down on anybody who considers himself an addict, alcoholic. That was a part of my journey. You know, anything that affects me from the neck up, I'm going to take to the extreme, right? So I got introduced to these pain pills, and I once again felt okay. You know, I once again felt like I felt a part of. I ended up graduating, going to college, you know. I lasted a year and a half in college, you know, just because of my drinking and whatnot. And from the span, you know, I don't want to say too far in my past, you know, from the span of 20 to 24, I went through 3 treatment centers. I went through countless detoxes. I went to addiction counselors, you know, and I dragged my family through my disease. You know, they were always there to help. I just wasn't ready to do anything about alcoholism. I didn't understand this, that I had a disease, right? I thought it was a phase. I was very naive. And I thought I could control and enjoy my drinking, you know? You know, I remember going to treatment for the first time and my father dropping me off. Now, he stopped drinking when I was 3. He's one of us. And you know, to look at his face and see the sadness and disappointment, I will never forget that, and I don't want to forget that. You know, even though I didn't get sober after that, I don't ever want to forget that, you know, because I don't have to cause that pain with my family anymore, right, which is another gift in sobriety. But, you know, and I remember going into that treatment, stepping on the scale, and I was 122 pounds, sunken up, just dying from my disease, right? And you know, I would look at going to treatment as a vacation stay. It was a 30-day getaway, away from life, you know, away from the job, away from the girl, away from everything. And by the end of my stay, I was like another counselor there. I was there to tell, you know, all the other patients what to do when they got out and whatnot. You know, I had all this knowledge, and I thought that was going to keep me sober, right? And then I would get out of those treatment centers, and I would rely on my own thinking, and I would get nowhere. I would get loaded time and time again, you know. It's because I was not taking action. It was blah, 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 you know. And I heard that from Lee one time at a meeting, you know. He said that guys come in and it's blah, 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 blah. And I could totally relate because I was me, you know. It was just, you know, I didn't want to do anything about it. I feel like I'm scooting right along. All right. So here I am getting out of my 3rd treatment stay. At that time, that was in 2016, early 2016. At that time, my family was, they didn't want me to stay with them. You know, they knew that they were enabling me and I was going to manipulate them, you know. And thank God for that because, you know, I was homeless in Omaha. That's where I'm from. I grew up in the Midwest, and I didn't have anywhere to go. And one day I get a call from my older brother who lives out here in California, and he lives down in Orange County. And he said, hey, you can come out here and stay with me if you stay sober, right? And I remember that being on St. Patrick's Day 2016 because I got on the flight. The first announcement they had was, since it's St. Patrick's Day, we're handing out free drinks. And at that point, I had a couple weeks, you know, but I didn't drink, you know. I ended up landing in Orange County. But it was that same song, same dance with me, right? Because I got off that flight. I started going to meetings, but this is how it was for me. I would start going to meetings. I would be the last one to get here. I would come in. Rarely would I get a sponsor. And when I did, I would look at the step work like homework, right? He would say, hey, we're going to meet up on Friday. I hope you have something written down so we can go over. So on Thursday night, I opened my notebook up and started just writing some stuff down, you know. Like they say in How It Works, half measures avail is nothing. You know, that's a perfect example right there. my experience with half measures, right? And I wouldn't ever get service commitments, you know, because I was too busy, right? Yeah. I had a part-time job at the time. I wasn't doing much. But I was too busy, you know, because I'm selfish and self-centered, you know. And I relapsed once again. I relapsed once again down in Orange County. And that, I went on a two-week bender after that, you know, and I did things I thought I would never do, you know, because when I get loaded, it starts with the bottle, I'm out on the streets getting a bag, and away we go, you know, I take it to the extreme, and I did that for a couple weeks. I ended up going back home to my brother's house, and, you know, I thought he'd be sleeping that night when I came home, but he wasn't. He was waiting up for me, you know, and I love my brother. I love my brother. You know, he's been there for me every step of the way, but that night he was waiting up for me, and he said, "What are you doing?" You know? And I was getting all my stuff packed up in my car, didn't know where I was going. I was just going to hit the road and run once again. You know, because before I came into the rooms, I had zero coping skills whatsoever. When there were other things going on and when life got hard, I would run. You know, I would not want to face my problems. So I was just going to hit the road, run, like I always did. And he said, if you get in that car, I'm calling the cops because you're loaded. And how about you sleep it off and we'll talk tomorrow, right? And got up the next day, and he had already arranged for me to come up to the hospital in Santa Barbara for a week to detox, you know. And he brought me up to Santa Barbara, and at that point, you know, I had that gift that we talk about, that gift of desperation, you know, that I couldn't picture my life with or without it, you know. I didn't want to be here, right? And Alcoholics Anonymous brought in a panel that I will never forget, you know, and that's when my moment of clarity was. That's when my God was speaking to me for the first time, because I kind of got out of the way, and I was actually listening in that meeting that they brought in, and they talked about the contempt prior to investigation right there. And what I got out of that day was, you know, that other member looked me in the eye and he said, you know, have you ever gave this program a chance? You know, have you ever gave it your all? You know, and when I'm saying your all, have you done the steps with a sponsor? You know, have you gone to meetings? Have you got service commitments? Have you done what's suggested, what we do in this program? You know, and I said, no, you know, and that was one of the first times that I was actually honest with myself and another man, you know, no, I haven't, you know. After that stay, it was suggested that I move up here to Santa Maria, someplace I've never been in my life, and move into a halfway house, you know. And I owe a lot to Pathways, you know, and I know that there's some guys in this room tonight that are staying in Pathways, you know, and that house was one of the reasons I'm still here, you know, because I had to go to meetings every day. You know, which I look back now, that was a blessing. That was a blessing, you know. I had to have a sponsor visit every week, you know. And I had to get up and make my bed, right? That was something I didn't ever do, really, you know. I was undisciplined, you know. I had to get up and make my bed. And my sponsor at the time, you know, suggested that I get on my knees every night and thank my God for another day, and I didn't believe in God, but he said, go ahead and do it anyways. Get on your knees and pray to a God that you don't believe in. You know, so I started doing that. And I found my God in Pathways, you know, in that room. And that was because I started working the steps. You know, I started honestly and thoroughly working the steps. I remember doing my third step with my sponsor at the time up in Orchid Hill. And the freedom and relief that came along with doing that third step that day was unbelievable, you know. And I still remember him saying, you know what, my only wish for you is that you feel a part of, you know. And that's when he started suggesting that I get service commitments. And I said, what do I have to offer anybody? You know, I have a couple weeks, or however long I had at the time. And he said, can you stay after the meeting and wash down the tables? Can you push in the chairs? Can you wash the coffee cups? You know, can you just do those things to get out of yourself? Can you ask the secretary after the meeting if there's anything you can do to help? You know, so I started doing those things. And when I started doing those things, Kevin and I were talking about this before the meeting, you know. When I started doing those things, other members started coming up to me and talking to me, you know, because they saw me being of service. And that's why I think it's so important for service, you know. Just staying on that is, service has saved my butt time and time again, you know. I haven't done anything perfect, but I've always had a service commitment, you know. I've always had a service commitment. And what's really cool is, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous brought a panel in when I was in detox, and I had the service commitment here at the Good Sam for a year. And that was an amazing experience, you know, going in there once a month. You know, every time I left that meeting, I was full of gratitude, you know, I was just full of gratitude. And you know, it's a reminder for me, you know, because it's about what I do today, you know, and what I try to do is I try to keep it simple, you know how we say it in here, so what goes along with that is I try to go to a stag once a week, which I have a commitment at, you know. I try to go to at least one big book study a week, which I have a commitment at, I do my best to pass the message on to the alcoholic who still suffers. And getting on with that, you know, my sponsees, the men that I've worked with, have helped me way more than I've helped them. You know, there's been so many moments in my recovery where I wasn't doing so good, you know, and I was stuck in self, just thinking about my wants and my needs, right? And my sponsee calls me, right? And it just gets me out of self, you know. It just gets me out of self, and that's going back to page 89. You know, that's a bright spot of my day. You know, getting a phone call from a guy that came in a couple months ago and saying that, you know, he's starting to feel better, you know, and it takes me back to when I was newer. You know, I'm still new, but when I was in my first 30, 60 days, when is that roller coaster, that obsession was there. But I would have those moments where everything was exactly the way it's supposed to be, and I would share that with my sponsor, you know, and he'd be like, just wait, you know, just wait, you know. You know, I love it, because when I came in, I didn't believe in God whatsoever. I did not believe in God, but I was willing, right? I was willing, and I just started working the steps, and that relationship with God has come, you know. And right here, right now, you know, that hole that I had for so long is gone, you know, right here, right now, because I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm amongst my people, right, and God just continues to show off, you know. He continues to show off. My first experience with resentment, right, as when I had a couple months, I got a job, and a construction job, and I've never worked construction in my life, right? And I'm driving up to Hearst Castle with my sponsor at the time, and I had this foreman who just, like, belittled me, and I didn't know how to swing a hammer at the time, and he was like, what are you doing here, you know? And I was early in sobriety where I was just losing my mind, right? And I went to a meeting that night after I got home, and I heard that somebody shared, you know, if you ever resentment, you just got to get on your knees and pray for them. You know, pray for that health, that prosperity, and that happiness. You know, it's on page 552, which I don't have in this book, but for their health, their prosperity, and their happiness for 2 weeks. And that's never failed me since. But so I started praying for this guy, right? It was the first night. I go back to work the next day, and he's gone. They sent him on another job. And I was like, dang. It works, right? But with resentment, you know, it's that same exact concept. Yeah, because God might not take that person out of my life that I'm praying for right then, right now, you know, like it was with that. But I don't have to allow them to take space in my head, you know. And like what I've learned from Victor, you know, everybody has good in them, every single person. So if we focus on the good, you know, that has freed me from resentment, you know. And the hardest one for me, you know, I don't mind sharing it from up here, is when I was younger, I was molested at 7 years old, you know, and that was a resentment that I carried for a long time that I never shared with anybody, right? And and that was something that I didn't share with my sponsor when I first came in either. But when I got to the point, after I did my third step, I saw God working in my life, right? So I got honest, you know, I got honest when we did that inventory and that fourth step. And that freedom and relief by just sharing it was one thing, but getting that pen down to paper and writing about it was a whole other thing, you know, because there's magic in getting that pen down to paper. You know, I can have all this stuff in my head. I can have all these fears, all these resentments. Once I get it down on paper, by the time I'm done, just writing some of those resentments out, it's gone because I just make it up in my head, right? But so with that particular resentment, it was hard to find my part, right? It's hard to find my part. And at the end of the day, I have to protect my peace, right? I was letting that guy affect me, affect my peace, and I had to forgive him, right? And I prayed for 2 weeks, and it was gone. Just like it says in the book. You know, do it every day for 2 weeks, and you will be free. And that's exactly what happened with me, right? That's exactly what happened with me. And in this last year, working with Bob, I was causing a muck in sobriety. You know, I did things that I had a lot of shame, and I had a lot of guilt, and I was holding on to those secrets, right? And when I got honest with Bob, you know, we started doing some work, you know. I remember at first I would go to his house at like 7, and I'd be there till like 10:30. Like, God bless you, Bob. just hearing me just go. But you know, but I looked at my part, you know, and we got into step 6 and 7. And when I did my steps the first time, I kind of flew over step 6 and 7. I flew over them, right? And it's those defects, you know, and it's those things that are blocking me from God, right? And one of the most powerful things that I heard and that I kind of really experienced with was God can't help you if you're still acting out on them. You know? God cannot help you if you're still acting out. You know? And getting those down on paper, those defects, and looking at the opposites of those. You know? And asking God to remove those defects and replace it with the opposite. Right, it was uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable. But I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that when it's uncomfortable and painful, as long as we don't pick up, we get honest, you know, we start writing, doing the work, we can grow. And, you know, I can honestly say that from the time, you know, that I was going through that, and from then to now, I'm not the same guy, you know, because I've been awakened to the Spirit, and I've seen God work in my life just by the way I'm acting, but it's like what I do today, you know, it's that daily reprieve, you know. I get up in the morning, and I thank God for another day, you know, I ask Him to direct my thinking and my actions, like exactly like what it says in the book. I mean, it tells us what to do, right? Yeah. Direct my thinking and my actions. Let it be divorced from self-pity and resentment. You know, throughout the day, when I face indecision, I ask God for inspiration. You know, I ask God for inspiration. And I try to hit a lot of meetings because I need it. You know, I need meetings because if I get stuck in my head, that's a dangerous place for me to be, you know. And if I don't keep sharing what's going on with my sponsor or the other men in this program, you know, who I feel comfortable sharing those things with, then I'm going to go right back, you know, to the way I was acting, you know. And that's not being the man that God wants me to be, you know. You know, also another thing I like to talk about is we have fun in sobriety. You know, these last 2 years I've been able to be a part of Jesse's wedding and Matt's wedding, you know. And that was fun, you know. That was a lot of fun, you know, just to be there for my brothers. To be asked to be in a wedding is one thing, right? Because I was never asked before, you know. Nobody would ever ask Nate to be in their wedding, you know, because I was a slob and drunk, and I probably wouldn't make it, right? You know, to be able to experience that with my brothers, you know, is amazing. It's a gift. It's a gift, you know. And after meetings, we go out to eat. You know, we'll go for some milkshakes, right? And we have fun. You know, we have fun in sobriety. I still got 15 minutes.
Oh, man.
Okay, well, so the prayer of St. Francis has been something that I've been incorporating into my daily routine, and it's been powerful, you know, because it says it is by self-forgetting that one finds, you know. And you know, I have to read that, and then I read the top of page 20 in the mornings as well. You know, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon the constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs, right? And an hour later, I might be stuck in self, right? Or I might forget to do that in the morning. But I've learned that it's not too late to get back to being the right size. You know, thanking God, doing those prayers, right? It's not too late. I try not to be so hard on myself either, because I've acted this way my whole life. You know, I've been angry, I've been resentful, I've been selfish, you know, I've been fearful. But I'm a little less fearful today. Right, I'm a little less selfish today. You know, it's that spiritual progress we talk about, you know. And, you know, I've had moments in sobriety where I've looked at this like a race, you know, that I want to have the most commitments, you know, I want to do all that stuff because people pleasing has been a really important defect for me to look at, you know. Am I seeking the approval of others or God is what it comes down to. Right? And if I'm seeking the approval of you guys, I'm not doing God's will. You know? That's been, it's hard, you know? Because I want people to like me, right? I don't want to feel those insecurities, you know, feel less than. But, you know, it's that spiritual progress, you know? And I'm exactly where I need to be. You know, I'm exactly where I need to be. And, you know, it's by doing the work, you know, because faith without works is dead. You know, I've heard that time and time again. You know, I can know this big book front and back. I can know the other book front and back. But if I don't stop living it, nothing's going to change. You know, I can listen to all these speaker tapes, you know, but if I don't try to practice those principles and start doing what they do, nothing's going to change. You know, and that's been my experience, you know. Nothing changed until I started working the steps, you know. And once I did, you know, it's been so different, you know. And it's a miracle, you know. It really is a miracle. That's all I got, guys. I'm going to call it. I'm going to wrap it up.
Jesse and Nate, I met them both at the same time, and it's been wonderful to watch you guys both. Another hand for me.